Okay, that should be good on the silence. How would you like to be introduced, just so I know, Sergio?
Okay, so just, my name, last name. Sergio is
just
right.
Just to make sure we pronounce Halabi. It correctly.
yeah, I know. It's Halabi. It's Halabi, exactly. And just mentioned that I am the host of my podcast, which is Paradigm Shift. And
Paradigm Shift.
Exactly. And that the podcast basically explores truth through forgotten knowledge, ancient theories, ancient civilizations, and that's it, basically. Nothing more than that.
Okay.
Yeah. If you'd like, he can set you up, and then you can let people know that.
Okay. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah, just because we don't want to misquote you at all.
I get it. No problem.
Cool. Okay, Kyle, yeah. You're good.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Dark Rum Podcast. I'm Kyle. Today, Ryan is a little under the weather, so Jared's joining us again. And also, we have a very special guest. We have Sergio Halabi from the Paradigm Shift podcast. If you'd like to introduce yourself or let us know a little bit more about your show.
Yeah. Hi, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show first. And like you said, basically, I host my own podcast. It's called Paradigm Shift with Sergio Halabi. And in each episode, I try to discover truth that has been either kept from us or we have forgotten it as a civilization. And I delve into some conspiracy theories, some spiritual ideas, some philosophical ones. And I have a specific interest in ancient civilizations. There's something I'm very, very passionate about. And this is basically what today I'm going to bring to you guys in the episode.
Awesome. No, I love that stuff. I love ancient history, and we're big for conspiracies here too. And I know that this has an element of some extraterrestrial type ideas to it too, which is another big thing we have. It's really a shame that Ryan's going to miss it because he is a
his favorite
alien
things.
Fanatic. Oh. Yeah. I was like really kind of hoping he'd be here for that, but yeah, he's just not feeling well. All right. So let's start off what are the Anunnaki? Oh, sorry, everybody. We're going to be discussing the Anunnaki today.
Yeah, the Anunnaki are a very trendy topic recently, actually, within all the ufologists and conspiracy theories, because new information keeps coming up every day and people are discovering stuff on their own. But just to kind of give you an overall idea of the mythology behind the Anunnaki, who they were, and then we can delve deep into how they appear in different religions and different, you know, stuff that have either have been changed over time or have been completely put to the side and not taken seriously and all that. And basically
that's something I'm really excited for.
Yeah. There's gonna be quite a few, you know, swerves here and there, and it's gonna be very interesting. Basically, the mythology first of the Anunnaki comes from ancient Sumeria. Sumeria is the first ever civilization; it's the cradle of civilizations for humanity, and it's what's known as modern day Iraq. And we can trace back all the religions and all the stories and everything to this first thing: writing, communication, like I said, religion, laws of how to build society and everything. Basically, even when it comes to settling down, because as you know, humanity was first as after we evolved and everything, we became hunters and gatherers, and we would be moving from one area to another and all that. And after a while, something happened, which will become more clear after, you know, this episode, that we moved from being hunters-gatherers to settlers. And we became sitting in one location. We learned about agriculture. We learned how to raise cattle and start building buildings, societies, having laws for all this stuff. And this is where basically the first quote-unquote religion came, which is in the form of the Anunnaki. And what is interesting about the Anunnaki that separates us from every other mythology that has come after it is that the way that people used to talk about these gods, these Anunnaki gods. They describe them as they were living among them. Now, if we look, for example, at Greek mythology, you can always see that they talk about these gods who were living on Mount Olympus, right? So they were living somewhere else. When we talk about Egyptian mythology, we talk about all the gods who were also existing in different planes of existence, whether it was underground, whether it was the, you know, the hell or somewhere in the heavens and all that, and so on and so on. And the difference with that when it comes to the Anunnaki is that they are much more literal and much more present in our day-to-day life. So they would talk about how they were walking among them. And even the name, the Anunnaki itself, it actually, when translated to English, it means those who came down from the heavens. So you can see that from the start, when you're talking about a civilization that is very literal and very, it doesn't have that strong vocab. So they don't have too much to explain to, other than what they're looking at, right? So, and they must have seen something come down from the skies, right? To call them those who came down from the sky. This is literally what it translates to. It
was a very literal language, right?
Very literal, exactly. And even when it comes to what they were discussing within that mythology, it was pure stuff. Like, even they would say that the gods came, that's how they refer to them, right? As gods. They came to Earth to work on Earth. And then they worked for a very, very long time, thousands of years, and they got tired after a while. And there was this rebellion within the pantheon of the gods. And the story goes is that at some point, there was a god who is in charge of the whole operation on Earth, basically. He was like one of the biggest ones. And his name is Enlil. I'm sure you guys are familiar with the name. Mm-hmm. So Enlil is not really his name as much as it is his designation. So En is basically god of or in charge of, and Enlil is heavens or the skies. And he was thought to be, he was believed basically to have, to be in charge of everything that is regarding to Earth, especially when it comes to the atmosphere or the skies. And he would not be sitting on Earth. He would reside somewhere up higher than Earth. But when he is needed, he would be called down and he would come down to Earth. And he had his brother, who his name is Enki, who is also another designation. And Enki was god of Earth. Ki is Earth. When we, like Enki, so god of Earth. Just like the Anunnaki come down on Earth, Ki is a translation of the word Earth, basically. And tell me.
In the research that I did, they referred to them a lot. Like the stuff that I came across, they kind of referred to them in the terms of like Greek gods, where like Enki was the god of the oceans and rivers, and like the patron of like a specific city, and Enlil was the god of like air and winds and storms and stuff, but also of keeping heaven and earth separated from each other.
Yeah, these come from a bit of different translations. You know how you have some words which once they are used in a specific way, right, they kind of roll with that. So you have a bit of like several different schools of thoughts when it comes to the literal translation of the Sumerian language. And
right. And that makes sense, because when it comes to religion specifically, I always find it interesting how like small mistranslations change so much. Like I've done a lot of research when it comes to like Christian mythology and stuff. And it's always funny, like one word changes the entire story and like makes a huge difference sometimes.
Well, to kind of, since you mentioned the Christian religion, there's something that is connected to that when it comes to the translation of the word. And this is something that, me being Arab, I have a bit of a different pronunciation of certain words. So I was able to kind of connect the dots when it comes to this, something that others might have missed. And it's the word il in Enlil, right? So il at the end, and how it's actually, even in Christianity and in Judaism, it's used as a reference to heaven and to the sky, in a more divine way, because every name of angel that exists within the Abrahamic religion ends with Il, which is a direct translation to like something that is sent from that area. So for example, when you talk about the archangel Michelangelo, his in Arabic and in the old Assyrian language is actually Michael. So Michelangelo is Michael with an il at the end. And the angel Gabriel is actually Jibril with an il at the end. Even the one that they, you know, like the devil, or they call the morning star Israel, is actually Azrael. So you can see that even within the Judaic and the Judaism and in Christian religion, they still used those, you know, suffix, I think it's called, at the end, with adding il to any divine being that was present at the time. Which is why I feel like there's a lot of mention of these Anunnaki gods, even within the Abrahamic religions. And I'll be getting to that a bit later. But just to kind of, you know, not to...
All right. No,
go,
I know.
Yeah.
Kind of set it up, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
See, like, when I was, like, listening to these, or, like, thinking about these, it made me remember, like, I know, like, Christianity is promoted as being a monotheistic religion, but in reality, there are multiple gods in it.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if the Anunnaki are basically the same as, like, the Elohim from the Judeo-Christian religion.
Yeah, yeah. I will be... I have a lot of examples that...
One of the ways that... I'm sorry. I lost what I said.
I mean, I actually mentioned something to Kyle because I'm not quite as much of an expert as either. I'm definitely not as much of an expert as either of you. But I made an immediate connection to the word Anunnaki and also Enochian, which comes up a lot in the Christian text. Not even full biblical text, but just text describing angels, saying that that is their language and things along those lines. So it just immediately clicked in my head that there was a very strong parallel between just those two words.
Well, Christianity always did this big thing where it would take in other religions in order to like get people to join. But then they would sometimes change things so that like something that was good in one religion was now evil in Christianity.
That's go-to Christian.
I was kind of like thinking that's probably a big part of it, especially when I was doing the research and I heard about like the Nephilim giants and stuff.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like you have stuff that even are in the Bible till now, you know, and it feels like when you look at it and you go like, why isn't anyone mentioning this? You know, why isn't this more talked about? It's right there in a religion that is supposed to be believed by a lot of people. At the same time, this religion excludes or rejects a lot of other stuff, right? And it's kind of like it contradicts itself when it refers to certain things. So, for example, like, obviously, we're all very familiar with the story of the flood, right? And that is something that is very prominent in so many mythologies. Like maybe most, all of them talk about at some point something happened on Earth and, you know, there was a flood and it was like a sort of a reset button. And you can see that there are so much parallels in the stories between the Anunnaki mythology and the Abrahamic religion, talking about how they basically just changed a few names and they added the idea that it was only one God doing all of this. Where in fact, even if you are reading the Bible itself, especially the Old Testament, and you know, talking about Adam and Eve and talking about you know, the destruction of Babel and the flood and all that, you can always feel that this God who is acting on this has a dual mind. You know, like he would come one day and say, I'm going to destroy this, the humans and the cities because I don't like them. And then he would turn and say, but you know what? I like you guys. And, you know, I'm going to warn you not to go there and all that. And it just doesn't really align, as opposed to when you see it under an Anunnaki lore, you would see that there were actually more than one, and there were two different ones who had so much power, which were both Enlil and Enki, who Enki basically was the mastermind of humanity, and he was the scientist behind how man came to be, and he grew fond of them to an extent. And it was Enlil who always wanted to destroy humanity. He would like send the flood, and he would send the plague, and he would make the vegetation die and everything. And it was always Enlil who would be like, okay, you can go and build the ark and save yourself, or you can make sure not to go to that city, which will be destroyed in a couple of days, and so on and so on. So it's very obvious in that mythology how it makes sense that some gods would want the destruction of man, and some gods would not want it, and that's why mankind kind of like was able to juggle this thing going on. Whereas in the Bible, it's like, okay, there's one God, and he's simply just changing his mind all the time. You can do this, but
seems very bipolar.
Bipolar, exactly. It just doesn't make sense. It just, once you kind of see it from that and take it more literally, it adds up. It aligns. Okay, so there has been more than one, and there seems to be that there's a fight between them. There is a disagreement over what to do with mankind. Why are they on Earth? How did it happen? And all that. And
well, another thing that I always thought was funny in Christianity is it's never that it's like there aren't other gods. It's that their God says to only believe in me. He doesn't necessarily say there aren't. It's just he's like, I'm the better one. Just follow
that
what I say to
do. Exactly on point. And there is this part where I have saved. I just want to read it correctly so that Yeah, so basically this is from the book of Exodus in the Old Testament, and it's when Moses was, that after he kind of set the people of Egypt free from the Pharaoh, and he walked them through towards the promised land of Israel, right? Mm-hmm. And there is a paragraph which kind of caught me by surprise, and it actually, I'll quote it. And this is what he says. He says, basically, God was talking to Moses on the way, telling him what he should be expecting to see once he reaches the land of Israel. Okay, and he tells him, do not make any treaties with the people of the country into which you are going, because this could be a fatal trap for you. Instead, tear down their altars, destroy their sacred pillars, and cut down their symbol of the goddess Asherah. He actually named a specific goddess, Asherah, and he continues, for I am Yahweh, a jealous God, and do not wish to share you with others. That's what he actually says within the Bible that claims that he is one.
Yeah.
Right? And this kind of even stood out to me when he is talking about a specific goddess and named her by name, and he refers to her as Asherah. And we go back to the Anunnaki mythology. Asherah, at the time, the name was pronounced differently because this was the Assyrian civilization. But way before that, she was actually known as different names, as Ishtar, Ashtarot, and all that. And she is actually the wife, basically the stepmom of Enlil. And he did not like her at all. At the time, like even within the mythology, they had a lot of issues. So his name is Anu, and Anu is the god of all the gods, basically. He's the master, he's everything, and which is the name of Anunnaki from Anu. And his wife was Asherah, and she did not like Enlil. So even that translated into the Bible, it doesn't make sense as to why this Yahweh God would mention her and only her by name. It seems like there's a very personal beef going on there.
There's a very anti strong female presence in Christianity.
Oh,
too.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
From what I saw, as far as for Ishtar, was she was a very politically minded, very strong fertility goddess.
Yes.
And in the Anunnaki, wasn't she? I had you're way more versed than like the actual mythology from it. Because when I was listening to you, you got to read like actual like things from it. I'm gathering information from like third party stuff.
Yeah.
And so like I was the notes that I got was there was a goddess named Ki that was married to Anu, and then there was another goddess named Inanna who would be also known as Ishtar in
yes.
Assyrian and other cultures of the time that were in the Mesopotamian area.
Yeah, basically, even within the Anunnaki mythology, the presence of the goddess was really important. And like you said, she is the basically the symbol of fertility and life. Now, there were others that mm-hmm. were not, but in terms of her as Ishtar, she was extremely important. And by the way, Ishtar is current day Easter. So we still did not even, you know, get rid of that. So even when Christianity yeah. celebrates, you know, the resurrection and the, you know, all that time, this is happening during Easter, which was a holiday for Ishtar. So this is, to me, when I start seeing these kind of connections that are still till now, that they haven't let go of the original idea of something that was there at the start, and it still maintains, you know, how important it is, even, you know, even if it's a bit hidden or even if it's a bit twisted along the way. Like, I don't know if you know, but the Pope now, Pope Francis has a prayer, a room. Actually, it's very, very big, but this is where he holds all the prayers and everything when there's a larger group of people. And the shape of the building mm-hmm. is an actual snake.
I saw something about that. I did see something about that recently.
And the snake
is very interesting to me, considering how they feel about serpents.
Exactly, because if when you see it from a Christian background or Abrahamic in general, you see that the snake was kind of like the bad person, like the bad guy of the story. Mm-hmm. Like he's the one who manipulated, you know, humanity and Adam and Eve and all that. Where in fact, in other civilizations, the snake is represented as wisdom, as the one that brought wisdom to mankind. You know, so
yeah, a lot of Native American cultures do.
Yes,
that.
Exactly.
South American also South American. Do that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And also another thing that even in the Bible, when it comes to the snake itself and the story of Genesis and, you know, the creation of man and everything, it's never mentioned that the snake is actually the devil. Like there is no mention. Like
the devil is a modern.
Exactly. Like even in the entirety of the Torah, which is the book, there is no mention mm-hmm. of the devil himself. Like there is no devil. Even there is only one paragraph mm-hmm. where just a character known called Satan, that he appears in front of God and God looks at him and says, "Who are you?" And Satan replies, "I have been walking around, you know, going around my business through earth, and I've landed here," or something. And then that's it. Like, this is the only mention of any character or creature named Satan, which is very weird because yeah. it's like, it's the entirety of the religion based on the fear of this devil who is going to come.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I think especially Catholicism. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was like medieval times when the invention, like they decided they needed a bad guy. And that's when they started to really like promote that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Also, like that's Kyle's favorite thing to basically state every time we talk about it and we mention the devil. It's that his kind of outlook on the devil is the devil's the bad guy in the story because he's the one that gave knowledge.
Yes,
to people.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because he's the bad guy because he helped out people.
Because he helped out people.
Actually, it has a lot of ties.
And it doesn't work in the benefit of the religion itself because they don't want you to be knowledgeable. They want you to be obedient. So
that they do not.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So whatever character is going to come and give you more information or unlock something within your brain, he's going to be considered as the bad guy because it's like, yeah, he is mm-hmm. going to get this person to question things and we don't want that. So, you know.
And that's actually one of the things that spreads. That's not even just Christianity. That's like something from a lot of the religions where like how you said Enki gave humans knowledge and then was sort of punished for it. That is in Greek religion. There's the same thing when it comes to Prometheus giving humans fire. Yes. And then the serpent giving them the knowledge in the garden. Like, that is something that is just all around. Like, that story is used over and over again.
And this is, I feel, what that like, if we want to connect the dots, this is what feels like that all these cultures and civilizations throughout time are basically telling the same story. Like, this is a very important story. Mm-hmm. It's the key to the creation, where we came from, how it happened. And it feels like it just wants to repeat itself under different names because of different languages and different expressions and different voices and all that. But it's basically always the same thing, that man was created to be a slave to another entity, which was much more advanced. Then someone gave mankind the key to unlocking things within their mind. And then so on. And there was this rebellion. Gods have entered into wars with each other and all that. And this is, to me, like, it's a how important, like, the idea that the first civilization dealt with these very advanced ideas, that no way a mind like that, if we're going to follow what scientists and historians tell us about the state of mind during that time, it doesn't align with how advanced these people were. You know what I mean?
Like, well, even if you think about it, like, it's a much more scientific approach in the way they view religion, how religion is viewed now. And it makes a lot of sense if that's where everything began, and then it spread throughout the world, like translating and retranslating, yep. And then this way people spread stories, it always, you know, you embellish a little bit the next time you tell it. And then the further it goes, it would make sense that everything would stem from one spot. Yes. And then you would have all these other versions of it and people fighting over which one's the right one when it's been long lost for millennia now at this point.
Exactly. I mean, consider a story that you have with a friend of yours, and then, like, you know, he's going to go tell it to someone else and then someone else. And we're just, you know, a month later, the story is going to come back to you with so much difference, you know, subtle changes here and there. And this is...
Yeah, you're talking, like, I wasn't even there. I don't know what that
exactly,
means.
Exactly. And you're talking, like, within a month, within the age of information, and, you know, we can store and record everything, and we still get some stuff wrong. Like even now, you know, like, even when you watch the news, I can take that news, go tell it to someone else, and, you know, add a bit of flavor to it, and then it changes. And you're talking here about possibly 10 to 20,000 years worth of, you know, storytelling and information with no record keeping and nothing. So it's like, it was important for mankind to maintain that story, to maintain how important our creation is, to keep telling it again and again. But it just happened that, you know, it moved from one time to another, from one continent to another, like you said, and it changed the small stuff, but the basic is still the same.
Yeah. One thing that I had a question for, because you have a way wider knowledge base than me. And like I said, I got a lot of stuff that was like the ancient astronaut conspiracy stuff.
Yeah.
And the planet Nibiru came up when I was doing my research, was something I was interested in, because I know the mythos behind that for like a while now, because I think it was like 2011 or 2012 when there was like the whole fear that it was going to collide with Earth again.
Yes, yes, 2012, happen. Yeah, yeah.
And then, so like what I was hearing was that the Anunnaki were from Nibiru, and there was an issue with the climate there, and they're having trouble growing things, so they came to Earth, much like most of the people of like European cultures expanded all across the country in search of gold. But for them, it was for creating technology and using it in alchemy and stuff. Is that something that is actually coming from that, or is that something that people have embellished now?
Actually, and to be like, if you look at the actual mythology itself, there is no mention of any specific planet or Nibiru or gold even or anything. Like, there is nothing concrete within the tablets that were found that actually mentions why the Anunnaki were ever on Earth. So I can't like say that, yes, this is the obviously this has been, you know, like it was brought together by Zakaria Sitchin. I think you've heard of him. He wrote several books where he would gather different information from a lot of different resources. So it's not like he was making it up or anything. What he was doing is he wrote this book called The Lost Book of Enki, where it's like kind of like a memoir where Enki was writing it, right? And he would get it. It's like a fictional story that he wrote, but based on the tablets and the different mythologies that he was aware of, the author himself. So it would be like as if Enki was writing himself, talking about what happened, saying how sad he is, saying that he, for example, like he's mourning the people who died from the flood, that he never wanted it to happen, all that. But there is no actual book or tablet that actually described that was what he was going through. You know what I mean? So it's a bit
sounds like he took like a kind of Christian approach to it, where it's like a story being told from the point of view of somebody else.
Exactly. Okay. And he even
I'm actually glad to hear that.
yeah. Even within that book and others, he says that there are stuff that I added together. I have filled some holes because the tablets are broken, because the stuff are missing and all that. So he kind of made sense of where the story would go. But there is no actual mythology written about the planet, Planet X, or why they came, or the fact that they had atmosphere problems, which is they came down to Earth to mine gold and then go back and send it. So we don't really know, like, per se.
Okay. I'm actually glad to hear that. Jared knows I'm super kind of anti the ancient alien astronaut theory. The ones where people are like, very much this is exactly what happened type stuff. And I'm like, you don't know.
I mean, no one really knows anything. I also feel like sometimes it
diminishes the value of like human mind and ingenuity by saying like, oh no, it had to have been these gray aliens that came and told us what to do.
Well, actually, first, to stop you there, the gray aliens are not the ones mentioned for the Anunnaki because, like, even there's like so many different types of aliens and all that. Yeah, the Anunnaki looked very much like humans. And given that you have brought this up, I have an idea for you to ponder on, which is something that I honestly have not heard anyone mention. Anyone. I'm serious. And even when I research it, I can't find any reason for it. So the idea is that the mythology says that the Anunnaki came down to Earth and they found the Homo sapiens, and we were still very early on in our evolutionary process, and they manipulated the DNA by mixing it with their own DNA. Are you familiar with this version of the story?
Yes. Yes, that is a much better version of it than what I know from the Christian one, because this sounds like something that could have happened instead of like using magic. They used like
science,
chemistry, and science behind it.
Basically, the saying goes right: like magic is just science that's not proven yet, or something like that. Like once it becomes science, it's no longer magic. So even when they want to describe it at the time, they wouldn't know what they're looking at. Like if I'm going to say, well, they took the DNA from us and they took the DNA. It's not at the time. It's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. What is DNA?
Actually, right? It's just magic. Yeah.
Actually, you bring that up is like a really fun thing. The thing that I told Jared about this a long time ago is like a lot of the books from ancient Egypt that people describe as being like magic books and stuff. Yeah. Were actual science and mathematics books.
Oh yeah, but and chemistry as well. And chemistry and alchemy and all that, because they wouldn't know how, certain things mix with others, and then the reaction that comes out. Like let's say like that volcano thing we all do in school. So to them, they would be like, "Oh, this is magic! How did he make water appear from nothing? And it's just pure alchemy." So
but hey, science is still magic to me sometimes. Like if I try and think about how my computer right now is sending my voice to you right now, I couldn't even
across the world. It's amazing.
Oh yeah. Imagine an ancient civilization thinking about this box that when you talk through it, you can hear someone from the other side of the planet. I mean, this is definitely magic to them. You know what I mean? And this is the idea that once when they describe certain things, they wouldn't have the words to say that. Saying this, I want to mention a specific paragraph, even in the Bible, that to me is an actual alien abduction, but to them, it feels like something that was sent by God. It's from the Book of Kings, and it's about I think he was a prophet. His name was Elijah. And it's about how he died, basically. And the paragraph goes as this. So it says, like, they were both walking. And as they were walking along, along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariot of Israel. And then he saw him no more. So here he described, the book described that a chariot of fire came down from heaven and pulled a person from earth, and then that person was no more. Now, if you take that as...
That's more like an abduction.
Exactly. Like every alien abduction story you hear about today talks about this bright light in the sky and then a beam of light coming and then the person being pulled into it. So,
and their closest knowledge to like a transportation vehicle would have been a chariot. Yeah. Not
exactly.
A
So, so because they don't know anything else other than a chariot or fire, they would call it a chariot of fire because they're not going to say, oh, a spacecraft, you know, appeared and it was floating above Earth and then a beam sucked, you know, my father or whatever. So,
yeah, you also said very literal languaging back then. So,
exactly. Exactly. So, when you start reading the, these religions, and basically this is the work I you know, hope one day I'm going to release a book on this, where if we literally look at these religions, and instead of talking magic, we talk science, and we talk science based on what we know now and what we might know 10 years from now, 1,000 years from now, then the whole religion takes a very different turn. Then we are no longer just talking about a God sitting somewhere and he's using magic and he's using, I don't know what, to communicate. We're talking about actual beings that exist in the physical world that have used technology that was much more advanced than we ever knew at the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, like that's, it's crazy to think about, but like I've always thought about it more on the scientific side. So like this... This mythology for me tracks a lot better than a lot of the ones where they just go, well, I don't know. So that was magic. Where this one kind of, they try to give an answer, but they give it in a way that is the best description that they have for it. Meaning that they don't have like certain words for these things they're seeing because, you know, these beings aren't coming down and be like, hey, let me tell you about all the stuff we have.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, we've got this, so you do what we say.
It's like everything has a, to the best of my understanding.
And that's next another thing that comes, that's another thing that exists in a bunch of religions, because I know there's like in ancient Indian religions, there's like a war between the gods.
The,
flying chariots and nuclear explosions involved, basically.
Yes, weapons that actually, like, they describe how there's radiation even. They mention death of all the plants and the animals and how people looked once they were exposed to this, you know, explosion and to these weapons. And once you look at them, you actually see that they are describing what we know now as nuclear weapons. It's really kind of insane when you put it like that.
And isn't there even a certain level in this mythology of something like that?
Really, so there is one. So this is something basically in the Bible. It's mentioned as the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Are you familiar with those cities? Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
In fact, we
many years of Catholic school. I know those.
Yes, same as me, by the way. So, that place is actually now rumored to be in Jordan, where Jordan is located now, and Jordan on the map now is right next to, like, it's exposed to the what is known as the Dead Sea, and in that area, especially in the sea, it's actually called the Dead Sea because nothing lives there. It's complete death, and nothing can grow there, even on a microscopic level. And some geologists have said that it's because there's a very high level of radiation in that area, especially at the bottom of the sea, that prevents any life from forming. And we're talking this radiation that has been going on for nearly 5,000 to 6,000 years. That aligns with the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. And that in the Anunnaki mythology, there after the flood, Enki was not pleased at all with what happened. Actually, it's Enlil who was not pleased because he thought, you know, humanity was gonna, you know, vanish, And he found out that Enki warned humanity, told them about the flood and saved them. So there was this big rift among the gods. The entire pantheon was split into two and wars were starting to basically rage, or there was this preparation for a big war. And the theory goes that Enki moved from where from Sumeria to worlds where Jordan is. And that was, he was basically staying there at the time. And Enlil wanted to create or have a war with him. And that's where, why he would send, you know, like these sulfuric acid, you know, fireballs from the sky, which
fire and brimstone raining.
Exactly. Which could be, you know, rockets as far as we know.
Yeah.
And yeah. And especially that the cities were like, were really against anything Enlil stood for, because he wanted obedience. He wanted slaves. He wanted people to worship him as a god and do what he says. Whereas those cities were more free. So they were like not worshiping anyone. They were just, you know, going about their business. They had their knowledge. They had their, you know, parties and everything. And that's what Enki wanted. So Enlil grew very, very angry with this. And he's like, I'm just going to destroy the cities and everyone in them, including, you know, my brother. And this is why even in the story, you have like people sent from the heavens or whatever you want to call it to warn certain people from those cities that something is going to happen. You need to leave. So they knew that a war is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was a couple of wars between the gods here.
Oh, yeah, here and elsewhere as well, like throughout, you know, as the... But this is not mentioned in these mythologies. They're mentioned elsewhere, but there are a lot of galactic wars, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I did have, like, one other question, because when I was listening to yours, you mentioned how... Enki was a little bit reptilian.
Yes.
And Jared knows I love to do this to him because it's I don't know.
It's one of his favorite things in the world.
It's like the reptilian mythology of like them being on Earth and stuff and being part. Is it? And then like also in this religion, there's the idea that they left home behind certain human beings that were a little bit more modified that were meant to rule over the rest of the humans when they left.
Yes.
And is it possible that those are the reptilians of like the modern myth and fear that people have currently?
No, these reptilians, the one you're talking about, which, you know, rule Earth today and the politicians and all of those.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's a bit far-fetched. I don't really.
I do too. I just thought it, to me, theory. It's just fun.
But I do have, I have researched those reptilians and their presence today on Earth, when it comes to what people believe in, is a very different existence, if you want, and I'll explain that, than how the Anunnaki were. So when it comes to different, if you want to talk about, you know, name them as aliens or ETs, let's say just extraterrestrial in any form, okay, there are different type of them. And you have ones which are physical, 3D, just like humanity is, just like everything that we are experiencing now. And like, for example, the greys, they fall under that category, which are physical beings, but they are advanced. Mm-hmm. But you have other type of beings, which are, if you want to go a bit, you know, you would refer to them as interdimensional. Okay, and this is where the idea...
That's a recurring theme on this show.
Okay, so and this is where the idea of demons in general, or beings that want to scare you, that come at night, that so on and so on, this is where they would lie, like there, under that category.
Okay.
So, and
it's funny because we actually come to that conclusion all the time with interdimensional beings and demons being that instead of being like these monsters from religion.
Yes, because it's not like it benefits the demon for you to, you know, like, you know, not worship God or something. Like, it's a very, you know, pathetic idea to kind of think that demons are here to kind of, you know, drove away. In fact, the interdimensional beings, let's say, when it comes to these reptilians or something, the theory behind that is that, you know, how humanity today, for example, we need food so that we get energy, right? So what we do is, because we there's so much of us, and we can no longer sustain a life of each person having, you know, a garden behind his back and a farm and all that. What we do is we get these, you know, these a lot of cows, for example, and we put them in one farm, and then we, you know, farm the hell out of them. And, you know, obviously it's creating a lot of issues and all that. But the purpose of putting these animals in specific ways in order to harvest the maximum amount of energy from them, right? Because we're going to farm, we're going to get food from them, their meat, their milk, all that. We're going to consume it and we're going to turn that into energy. This is basic science, right? So if we take that and then we apply it to a creature or a being that feeds on energy, but not through three-dimensional ways. He would feed on energy, for example, like, let's say, fear or anger or...
sadness.
Sadness, exactly. So anything, whenever you are, for example, like, let's say you have a bad dream, or you're alone at home and you get scared and you get that energy that comes out from you that is in the form of fear, the theory is that another being is feeding off of that, but not necessarily because they are bad. You know what I mean? Like, we're not bad as humans because we want to eat and survive. Yeah. So there's no bad intention into getting
you. It's just survival.
It's just survival. Just like we are, quote unquote, hurting certain animals in order to survive, other beings are hurting us in order to survive. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, it's a natural process.
It's a circle of life.
Exactly. Like, literally, but on an interdimensional life, like, not just
just here. It's almost, it's not to downplay it at all, but it's very Monster Inc-ish. You have, you have extra-dimensional beings coming in and harvesting our fear for energy to run their city. And there's nothing wrong with it. They're just regular people that are just trying to live.
And this is funny because we talk about this stuff like all the time. These same things like come up on the show a lot. So it's great that it like ties all the way back to like the first religion.
Yeah.
And that like the idea that there are these beings that do that, and they don't always just look for bad feelings either. Like, they're only the ones that'll try and like, they'll come when you're in a good mood too and like feed off that kind of energy.
Yeah.
So like it's
like when everything really just seems to be going your way and everything's great.
Exactly. Exactly. Even when you want to look at, for example, in the mythologies, when you want to look at these gods or, you know, for example, let's say Enlil, who is the ultimate bad guy to us and all that, like we can't look at it operating from a place of good and evil. You know what I mean? Because it's not about being good and evil. It's about what is important. Like, if I'm looking at...
Those are human constructs anyway,
Exactly. And if I'm looking at, you know, if I find in my house like a cockroach and I'm going to, you know, kill it, it's not because I'm an evil person. It's just because I don't want you here. That's it. Because I have a specific, you know, status in life that prevents me from empathizing with a cockroach, for example. Same thing for a more advanced being. That it's not because he is evil, but because he is incapable of empathizing with us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea like that...
Oh, you finished.
Oh, I'm saying that religions push for these... every religion actually push for these good versus evil pattern, right? Like, this is one is good, that one is bad, we should worship this one and all that. But in reality... it's much more complicated than any of this. Like, everyone operates within their own... sense of right and wrong, right? And
their scope of morality.
Exactly.
Speaking about like the situation with like a bug in your home, to me, I don't even see that as being like a morality issue. That is instinctual. Like, every creature on earth has a level of territorialism.
Yes.
And so, like, you see bugs outside, you're like, that's fine, I don't care. But you,
that's
comes
their
into
space.
Your space.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you have a different feeling towards that bug. And like, it's not good or evil. It's about like, it always goes back to like preserving your own safety and in like keeping your territory safe from
exactly.
things that are
even,
possibly harm to you.
Even in the mythology itself, and that's what's written, Enlil, it says that Enlil grew tired from humanity because they were very loud. Like, he couldn't sleep at night. It's as simple as that. He's like, they're too loud. I just don't want them anymore. Can we like kill them all?
We're just
like
bad
that?
Neighbors.
That's it. Like,
one of the
because,
things.
Yeah.
One of the things I read was that they told them to not overproduce, reproduce.
Oh, yeah.
And then they did it. And they're like, oh, go away.
Yeah, exactly. Because that
too many of
because
you now.
Overproducing was never part of the plan. because there was.
But that explains.
Yeah.
That explains like the migration of humanity then too.
Yes.
It's like, cause it wasn't like they were all told to leave. It was like, okay, you made too many. So some of you have to go find somewhere else to be.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't want them overcrowding their paradise, which actually I found out, like the garden from this, not so much the garden from the Christian Bible, but
yeah,
from this one is recently, I guess there's an excavation recently when they believe is exactly the Eridu or garden.
That is believed that you know, certain locations can fit under the this, but to kind of take you into a bit of a conspiracy theory route, it makes me wonder. Yeah, it makes me wonder why the every land that is related to the Anunnaki or to the Garden of Eden, to location or something, is under war or turmoil all the time, all the time. There is, you cannot have access to these lands. Like, even when you talk about Afghanistan, there are people, they could be lying, they could be telling the truth, no one knows. But there is part of the some people, some soldiers, some people talking about their role in Afghanistan and what they were doing and how they left and how what they would see in those caves and so on and so on. So it does feel weird, and it raises a question as to why these lands have been, like, even when you talk about the entirety of the Middle East, okay, which is the birthplace of civilization, this area has been at war for nearly 6,000 to 7,000 years. There has never been time where there is no problem. Every time. New religions come up. New cultures come up. Exactly. So it makes you wonder, why is it that this part of Earth is so basically soaked in blood, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's weird because you would think that because it's so sacred to pretty much everyone,
yes,
you would try to avoid fighting in those areas.
Yeah, it's like how people are just go, I'm not going to fight you in a church. Exactly. Let's take this somewhere else. Yeah.
Exactly. Like if all three Abrahamic religions, if Islam, Christianity, and Judaism all, you know, claim a part of the land, and they all call it a holy land, even if they might not agree on who the messenger is or who whatever, but the same God that they all worship, basically they know that this is, you know, this is the land, and yet they keep killing each other on it. They keep fighting, and it's never
a peace. Is like the one big no-no.
Exactly. That's literally the contradiction here.
It's something that's always confused me, because I even bring this up with my wife all the time, because she's very Christian, and I'm like, you know that these three religions are like, they all stem from the same place.
Oh, yeah.
How can you guys have differences to the point where you're so angry towards each other, when in reality, like, it's the same thing.
You're telling the same story from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the idea is to actually, the point of these religions is to, you know, keep dividing the people for different political issues. You know what I mean? And
at this point, yeah.
Yeah, and even like there is this pattern that I noticed when it comes to, like, there are two types of religion in the world, two types. One that you have to follow a god or gods, but basically this god is a conscience being that knows what to do and tells you what to do, and you are basically a slave. And there's which is Abrahamic religions. You have some stuff in like previously as well, like when it comes to Egyptians and the Greeks and all that. And you have the other type, mm-hmm. which encourages thought and encourages knowledge and tells you that God is not actually one conscious being. It's the energy that, you know, encompasses everything, and that you are, you know, your own self, and you can do your own thing, which is very anti-like.
So, like, Buddhism and things like that.
Yeah, so you feel like these two different thoughts clash between each other. It's like, it's as if one under Enlil, you know, spread this idea of worship of one God, and he's a very, by the way, patriarchal God, you know, very manly and mm-hmm. very masculine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all the traits of masculine traits, and this is not men and women, of course, it's just masculine, feminine energies and traits, and all the masculine traits within this, you know, God, which is like, you know, he plans and he judges and he is, you know, like he thinks in a specific way. Exactly. As opposed to this more flowy life, feminine energy of a goddess or of, you know, like nurturing and loving and all that, which aligns more, you know, with a God that actually like want to give life and all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A God that wants to keep us around and wants us to be happy.
So it's one of like the first things that I always ask people is like, when it comes to Christian religions, like I've never had a religion. Like I grew up without one completely.
Yeah.
And every time someone that I knew was like super Christian would come up to me and be like, how do you have free choice? We're like, oh, well, you know, cause I can do what they say or I can go to hell. I'm like, that's not free choice. That
yeah.
is you are being told what to do or else you're getting punished.
Two options is not free choice. Free choice is infinite option.
Exactly.
And they do not understand that. They're like, no. I have the choice. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really a choice when you tell me like, hey, would you rather burn in hell for all eternity or would you rather, you know, be happy
in paradise?
It's not
yeah,
a choice.
Which one sounds better?
That's not yeah. really a choice. Like you're kind of yeah. narrowing down the options.
It's definitely not a choice. It's like when you tell your kids like, do your homework or, you know,
you're going to get punished.
Grounded.
In trouble. Yeah.
Like it's on you. You make the choice. It's like, not really.
All right. Well, I think we should wrap up.
We're getting a little long, but this was a great conversation. No, this actually, this awesome is this is really good.
If you want to wrap up, I just want to leave you with something I wanted to mention before, but this is my, you know, a question for you to ponder on, which I was saying that I didn't
go
find anyone else to mention. And
yeah, go for it.
It's related to us as humans, and basically a trait that is in us that is nowhere in any other animal on the planet ever before mm-hmm. or will be ever again. And given that we have a theory or we believe that, you know, the DNA of humanity has been manipulated and altered and combined with another being or another DNA, and then this is what came off from us, what we are right now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we look at our bodies and how we evolved into our bodies today, every part of our body exists for a reason in terms of the, you know, from the evolutionary process that we've been through throughout all these millions of years, you know, fingers, toes, faces, eyes, everything and everything.
Yeah. The reason why our head's at the top.
Yeah. But one thing that doesn't add up and doesn't make sense from an evolutionary point of view is why we are the only creatures on the planet that the hair on top of our head grows and does not stop growing unless it is cut by a tool that exists outside of our body. Usually when we evolve, usually when you evolve into something, it's because whatever that environment had, you know, existing in a specific way, you evolve into that environment, right?
Yeah.
So, whether you know you wanna have a hair, let's say in the topic of hair, you have more hair on your body because you are living in an ice age and you need to be warm and all that, just like every other animal. So you grow, you evolve over so many years to adapt to that environment. The fact that we have a trait in our body that needed a tool in order to cut it or to stop it from growing means that the tool existed before we evolved into it. Which means that the tool of cutting the hair and then, you know, the reason why it keeps growing came from another source that at the time used that tool, if you know what I mean. And the other...
No, I love this question.
Yeah.
That actually is... That
and
is,
to give
is
you,
I didn't think this is what you were going to ask.
And to emphasize it even more... The other animal that has that thing going for him today on Earth is a sheep. A sheep, we have manipulated its DNA so that it does grow its wool and we cut it for him. It cannot stop growing and we have to cut it. Uh-huh. But we have altered its DNA in order for that sheep to become like this. It was never like this before.
Yeah. That's a purpose-bred animal.
Yeah.
So what is the reason for humanity to have traits like this in our body where supposedly we don't need to grow hair uncontrollably forever?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that is not a that. Wow.
Yeah,
that is a
good I never question. Thought about that. Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask. Like,
there is no earlier. Reason. There is no reason for your hair to really go past your shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't in other areas of your body, like the eyebrows. The even if you are hairy in different, like the under the armpits and all that, it grows and then yeah. stops growing because it doesn't need to grow more. It's doing its purpose. So the fact yeah. that the hair keeps growing like that, that means it's not doing a purpose. Why would we evolve
yeah.
into something that does not serve us at all?
That is true. Evolution is all about every single thing has a reason.
Yeah. Which means we have been manipulated at some point.
I thought you were going to ask about like wow. human beings having sentience and stuff. And I was like,
no.
Curveball. I'm like, I'm really going to have to think about this one.
That's a whole.
Man, yeah. I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight.
Yeah. Well, actually, when I thought about it, I was like, yeah, this needs a lot of thinking. Like, I need to know why. Like, this yeah. was a big reason for me. Yeah.
We're going to have a random aha moment and we're just going to have like a paragraph on our Twitter. That's what's going to happen. Or we're just going to go off on a rant.
I don't think it existed back then, but now we use hair as like a form of like peacocking, like the same way.
It's like a mating thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Which means that we've evolved into it, which makes sense because that's what evolution yeah. does. We've now used it in order to attract and in order to do so on and so on. But why would we have yeah. it in the first place?
Why did
place?
It start? Yeah.
And it doesn't yeah. even like when
just you have really long hair when it helps.
And when you look at previous, what are they called? Like when you talk about Homo erectus and Homo sapiens sapiens, which predate us, and the Neanderthals and all that, when you see how yeah. they look, they did not have the long hair like that. They had hair mm-hmm. all over their body. They were very, you know, monkey-like, but they did not have this yeah. feature that we have now. Whereas when you look
yeah.
at every depiction of the Anunnaki, when you see their monuments and their stones and, you know, when they carve into them and all that, all their deities, anyone has long hair and a long beard. And it was very prominent and very important within their depiction of these deities.
Yeah. It's crazy because even when you describe hair on the body, they refer to it as body hair and then there's hair.
Yeah.
Well, hair itself is separated from every other kind of hair anyway.
Yeah.
The hair on your head is yes. separated from your body hair, separated from animal hair, to where there's like certain dogs where you're like, that dog has hair.
That this
dog
hair has that has fur, yeah.
Because it's different.
Yeah, exactly.
Man,
exactly.
This is a killer question right here.
Thank you for that. That's yeah. going to wreck our day.
I thought I'd end it on a high note, you know, with the question.
Oh, definitely. Sounds good. That's awesome.
Definitely. But why don't you go ahead and let all of our listeners know where they can find you, what your social tags are, everything like that.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Thank you for that. So basically, like I said at the start, I have this podcast where I discuss this stuff and other stuff. It's called Paradigm Shift with Sergio Halabi. And I'm on all podcast channels, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcast, everywhere. And I also have an Instagram page. It's called Paradigm Shift Experience, where I discuss all this stuff, but I create more visual support for all the ideas that I talk about in my podcast. So there's an extra
yeah.
stuff there. Yeah.
I definitely recommend that. Like his Instagram is
very
awesome.
Cool.
I look
yeah.
at that.
Thank you.
It's great.
Thank you guys.
And your show is, I was listening earlier and it's so much more informative than ours, where usually ours is a little goofy. And I was like, I'm actually learning stuff right now.
Yeah. yeah
that's
I mean,
the
so
point.
If you want like, a good source yeah. of information, check it out.
Thank right. you. Thank and, you.
Definitely. Now you can always find more episodes of this show anywhere you get your podcast. And of course, our website, www.rumrunnerspodcastnetwork.com. There is going to be, what is it? This isn't in my show. Why am I doing this, Kyle?
No, that's go. Better when you do it. You're okay. better at it.
All right. So then you can find us on Instagram. That's at Dark Rum Podcast. If you have any stories that you'd like us to talk about, you can email us. That is at darkrum, or it's darkrumstories@gmail.com.
And you can also find us on Twitter at Dark Rum Podcast.
There we go. I knew I was going to forget at least one of them.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day.
All right. And stay creepy.